Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Cultural Intelligence podcast series by RWS. Today we're going to talk about what it takes to make enterprise AI work in the real world. We're going to talk about what separates a demo that works from one that people can actually trust and feel like they want to use it. And finally, we're going to talk about how teams design for real-world scale across markets. It was a great conversation. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our Cultural Intelligence podcast series by RWS. Today, we're going to talk about what it takes to make enterprise AI work in the real world and why in production, it means most of the time designing for reliability, context, and trust from day one. We're very pleased to have Matt Hardy with us today. Last time we were recording a podcast, I think we were doing it remotely, so we got a little upgrade here.
Absolutely, great upgrade.
Do you want to start by maybe introducing yourself, telling our audience who you are, what you do at AWS?
Of course, thank you. So, Matt Hardy, I look after all of our commercial products and our product teams. So that covers our generation, our transformation, and our protect lines of business.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you and welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
The first question we have for you is the following. So why do you think AI proof of concepts and prototypes often look really great in isolation, but then struggle when they go to production?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely true. That is absolutely true. I think that there's a bit of a trap set there. Which is the expectation in the industry. You know, people think, well, I built this fantastic POC, this great, great demo. All of the exec love it. I'm feeling like a bit of a hero. And then, you know, either we try and get it into production, or I then have to tell my bosses that that's actually going to now take me 12 months to move it. And it's because that's a trap. The trap is that the idea that you can just take a demo or a POC and take it into production. You know, I think you've got to think about the purpose of a POC. What's it for? It's to impress. The purpose of a POC is to impress, not to survive. So I think it's an amount of expectation setting. Everybody from the folks building it to who they're building it for need to understand that, and that the things that you build in a POC in order to make it look terrific and prove the concept aren't the same as you want to use in production. So, for example, you're going to design a nice happy path for your POC. You want it to demonstrate the elements of, in this case, we're talking about AI. So you're going to choose nice bits of content, nice easy flows in order to show the right benefits. But in the real world, that's not the case, right? You've got messy data, you've got incomplete files, you've got all sorts of inconsistencies. And then you've also got the needs of an enterprise business to work in. So a POC you can run on your laptop, and that's perfectly fine to have a production system in an enterprise. You need to think about, you know, user management, security, protection, encryption, logging, error management, all sorts of things, which is the gap between a POC and production. And we've always seen this, and I think it's definitely comes up a lot more now. And I think it's because it's so easy to create POCs that look terrific now. You know, you can anybody from somebody in marketing to somebody, you know, in the business can produce some really terrific looking pieces of technology just using LLMs and a bit of front end work. But as I say, that's a trap to think that that's something that you can go ahead and use. And you get something in this case which looks really good, because the purpose of our business is to make it appear in French, let's say. So it's very easy to make it actually French, but which is great for a POC. But for production, does it include the brand voice? Does it include your terminology? Is it compliant with regulations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? So as well as all of the things about, you know, messy data and being enterprise ready, you've got to also imagine that the output from an LLM isn't necessarily production output in itself. You need to add, in our instance, that cultural layer over the top to really go that final mile. And that final mile is the bit that gets missed.
That makes the difference.
Yeah.
What would you say is the number one reason of what makes a project fail then, like amongst all those things?
Yeah, I think that it's volume, because it's very easy in a POC to, as I say, you've got this nice happy flow and everything looks terrific. But if you're working at scale, then those things which appeared as a 1%, 2% error rate that you can handle manually, you know, in an enterprise where you've got vast amounts of content, that becomes a flood of issues and the flood of customer complaints. So it's those inconsistencies which are absolutely going to be all the way through your content for an enterprise because of the scale, are going to scale up. You know, there's a couple of percentage points that are perfectly acceptable and manually handled in a demo or POC suddenly become a massive, massive problem. And the second thing, I think, is more an architectural or design consideration, which is that one of the main benefits of AI that's really helping us now to see how AI can have a real benefit is the concept of agents. So agents allow us to take something which is automated, things that happen on its own with a machine, to things which are autonomous. So you let the machine make decisions, and you do that by creating lots of digital colleagues, individual digital agents which have their own purpose, and they all work together to get to a common goal. Now, the trouble is, if each one of those agents is 95% accurate, say, then that's great. But you string them together, and five agents acting one after the other at 95% is actually more like a 75% success rate, 95%. So these errors compound. So that's the other thing which makes these things fail, that you have to think about how you're going to put breaks into that circuit, or you're going to have fail safes. You're going to have something which is more deterministic that you can slot into that agentic process that allows us to, you know, identify these and jump out to safety.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you. Like, how do context and cultural nuance, makes change what looks good across markets and audiences? How does it have an impact?
Yeah, it absolutely does have an impact. Yes, it does. So it's all about intent. So I think we've been working for decades on translation, and it's very easy in the past to identify what's good or bad. How many errors are there? Did it use all the right terminology? You know, what sort of LQA score has it received? But LLMs now give us an opportunity to go beyond that and see not just the quality, because who cares, honestly, whether any of those numbers? That doesn't make this bit of content or this asset any more likely to make you recognize a brand, trust a brand, buy from a brand, you know, or be loyal to a brand. It honestly doesn't. So what we need to do is understand the intent of every piece of content. And if you can do that, then you can understand how culture is going to impact it. You don't just need to translate into French or into Spanish. You need to understand who the audience is that's going to be consuming it, and make sure that that asset, which obviously was created in the first place to generate some response from an audience, that continues to be the case in when it's translated. So LLMs allow you to not just translate from A to B in a straight word-for-word process. It allows you to transform the content to make it more usable, more applicable to different demographics, different cultures, etc. And the key is to make sure that you can test for that. And that's a whole different challenge to counting the errors, or, you know, counting the terminology mistakes. So the way that we're looking at this is really to figure out how we work with AI to assess assets like the persona that's going to be consuming them. So rather than just saying, is that good French? Is that good French? because that's hygiene, right? It has to be accurate and all of these things. But is that going to perform well for this culture or this demographic? So you might say, I want to test this is going to land and be engaging for a, you know, 15 to 25 year old demographic in Paris. I also, in French, I also want to make sure that this is going to engage a 65 plus from the Mediterranean, right? And you might need to speak slightly differently to those two audiences. So that's the LLMs allow you to make that cultural shift, but then, you know, really interestingly, to test for that before it actually goes to the audience.
Yeah, I guess it's just about adding value, making sure that you're bringing something to people as opposed to just like the exercise of being like, yeah, done.
Absolutely. Adding value is exactly it. And what we see is that all of this generates a completely different opportunity for us and for our customers. Rather than just say, okay, you have a market in France, so I'm just going to translate everything A to B into French. Fantastic. What we can now offer is something that transforms into multiple different versions for multiple different demographics within France and within French-speaking regions, and really allow that brand to engage properly with their market.
And this is actually what we were talking about with Marina on the podcast the other day. Culture is obviously not limited to a country either. So, you know, this content can evolve to go and meet the different people within the country.
That's or so
the
true. Culture. Yeah, so. It's not. So language, country, yeah. culture yeah. Is not a one-to-one-to-one.
No, it's not Absolutely. An easy formula, you know, at yeah. the end of the day. It's moving. It's constantly moving. Even the culture is moving.
So Absolutely agree.
You need to stay flexible.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that LLMs, the other thing that they offer us is the opportunity to really take a more detailed, more granular look into language. So in the past, brands looking to go into, let's say, South America would translate into Latin American Spanish, and then everybody would get that. So you've got English and you've got Latin American Spanish, official languages for a whole continent there. But in actual fact, you're going to engage with a Mexican Spanish speaker, an Argentinian Spanish speaker, Colombian Spanish speaker, if you can just change very subtly. Now, that's not necessarily worth the extra budget and time of getting individual speakers from those regions. But if a machine can do it, fantastic. You know, really drive that. So what we're expecting to do is transform a huge amount more content so that cultural granularity is much finer for
and it's
for
about
customers.
Being aware if it's worth doing it or not, just having this piece of awareness, I guess.
It's awareness, but the compromise, the decision now is a lot less, because if you can do it with a machine, that's much, much cheaper and quicker than having to make a compromise decision to do it with a human. Yeah.
What does separate a system that produces usable output, an AI system that produces usable output, from one that people want to trust and use and is good, you know, like the net extra mile?
Yeah, trust is an absolutely critical question here. I've described how the future is about doing more with the machine, because the scale is going to go like this, but we don't have any more people. So we've got to make less of the content have to go to humans, so that, you know, the same body of people can work on a smaller proportion of the content because it's growing. So what you end up with is a lot more content going to market which has no human eyes on it. Only the higher value or the higher risk content would go to a human review, and that's how the industry has validated the goodness of the content in the past and got the trust of our customers before they publish. So we need to find a way of making sure that trust is still there when a machine's doing it. And so what we're looking at is what makes you trust a machine output? And I think there's a few things. One is consistency. It's much easier to trust machine outcomes if they're consistent. I'd rather work with something which is 95% accurate or good all of the time, rather than sometimes it's 70%, sometimes it's 99%. You need to have consistency. And the other is an amount of confidence. So having the machine tell you how confident it is in this, and then reacting so that it can, in its flows, be able to degrade gracefully. So if it's not confident in something, or it's confident that the quality isn't there, it's managed to produce as a machine, that it doesn't just stop. It doesn't start over-generating or hallucinating, but what it does is identify this. It's conscious of itself. It's aware of what's happening, and it escalates to a human. So degrading gracefully, and doing that in a visible way that the humans can see why the decisions are being made, is what is going to bring trust, and that is necessary for us to get the full benefit out of all of this new technology.
And that's a very nice link, actually, to the next question. What role should governance and human oversight really play in keeping those AI systems reliable?
Yeah. So I mentioned earlier about the concept of AI agentic working, so more autonomy for the machine. And that means that we're letting the machine understand the content, make its own plans for that content, and executing them and then validating them. So we have this concept of transform, verify. That's how we're looking at the future of translation and transformation. And that means, that implies there's a level of governance. So rather than having workflows, which you have to configure, it's deterministic, you know that every bit of content is going to go down this workflow, and therefore you can build the governance in that way. We have to know that the machine will know what to do when it sees that bit of content. So it's moving away from a sort of a one-size-fits-all. All of this content is going to go down this one workflow so that we're absolutely sure that the governance is going to be followed. So we need to be able to, rather than set up that configuration, because we want the machine to be autonomous, that's where it's going to get its scale from. So we have to build into the machine the governance rules, and then let it identify how to apply that in once it actually makes the plans. So that's the thing. So allow the machine to understand the content, understand its value, understand its risk, understand the governance which needs to apply, and then make sure that it uses those rules and that understanding to make a plan on how best to translate. So when we ask it, hey, what's the plan to get this transformation done? We're not just saying, how's it going to be accurate? How's it going to be culturally aware? But also, how's it going to meet the requirements of the governance? So you put all of that in, but then you also have to architect for making sure that it is checking its own homework. So that you need to make sure that it's also checking that the governance is followed, and it's doing that in an automated way. And as I said before, it's also degrading gracefully, or it identifies this does need to go to a human because that might be part of the governance. This is such high value or high risk that some parts or all parts of the plan need to actually be with a human. So just because the machine is planning doesn't mean necessarily that all the steps that will be needed for the transformation will actually be run by the machine. It could plan to bring in humans depending on the governance for that content.
And decide, okay, this is the moment where we're crossing the limit. We need a human there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that what you would recommend to other companies wanting to scale enterprise AI? Do you have a piece of advice for them?
Yeah.
For the people in the same situation in other companies, maybe?
I think that's exactly it. That there's a lot of design for this. You know, we started off talking about POCs. Understand that a POC is not a production piece of kit. That's the first thing. And you know, I've been in product and engineering for a very long time now. And advice that I was given at the beginning of my career, which is held true all the way through, and even now with the emerging technology, it's more true than ever, that you start with the problem, not with the technology. So, you know, there's all of this cool emerging technology that everybody wants to use. But, you know, the age-old saying is that, you know, if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? So figure out what the problem is first and then apply the technology. That would be my first. And also then, once you understand the problem, you know, don't go too broad too quickly. Identify the problem and solve it vertically. So absolutely nail that particular piece of content, that particular use case, that particular process, and go, you know, solve it vertically before you start working out horizontally. and all of the things that you've learned and fixed and understood about the AI from that initial use case, you then benefit from as you take it further out.
I have one last question for you. Mm-hmm. It goes back to the title of our episode, of our series, really. Cultural intelligence. What does it mean? How would you define it?
I think cultural intelligence is the piece which really speaks to people. It's not just translation. Absolutely not. You know, there's any number these days of alternative pieces of technology which will give you cheaper, ever more cheaper and quicker translation. It's not. It's transformation. It's content which is designed to, as it's built, it's designed to maybe elicit a feeling or a behavior from an individual in that source. Now, if that's going to also elicit the same behavior for you with a different culture and different language, then it's not just a translation from A to B. I need to understand your culture. I need to understand the demographic that I need to speak to in order for that asset to engage with you in a new language, the same way that it engaged with me in my original language. And enterprises spend such a lot of time and money investing in these assets, which all exist to do something. You know, it feels to me that over the years, we've really then dumbed that process down into just translation. But now we've got the technology in order to be able to really, amplify the value of that by considering culture as well as language.
Yeah, really cool. Thank you. I love that you said feeling. Like for me, kind of, you know, as a user, obviously, you know, I don't have the whole production experience. But yeah. When I feel something, when I read like a piece of content or watch a video, it's when I'm like, okay, yeah.
Yes.
Probably that works.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt, for being here with us today.
Pleasure.
Yes, it was a pleasure to have you here. Pleasure to for audience, I'm sure, to hear everything about this. And then stay tuned for the next episode.